Hello, this is Blaise Bonpain with World Focus, coming to you from KPFK Los Angeles. We're podcast and available 24/7 on KPFK, where we are heard internationally. These historic demonstrations continue in Washington. It was not simply witness against torture, but that was followed by a die-in protesting the U.S. occupation and wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, highlighting opposition to the Obama administration's recent military escalation in Afghanistan to mark the beginning of President Obama's second year in office, and in support of finding alternatives to U.S. militarism. 27 people from Minnesota, representing multiple congressional districts, came to Washington to lobby their representatives to stop funding for the war. The action is a result of a partnership with the Chicago-based anti-war campaign, Voices for Creative Nonviolence. It seems that the only way we're reaching Washington is through civil disobedience. Washington does not seem to be listening. And also this week, of course, we had the Supreme Court tell us and explain to us who they represent. And I think that was made very, very clear. We have some comments from Ralph Nader, who said that the decision by the U.S. Supreme Court in Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission shreds the fabric of our already weakened democracy by allowing corporations to more completely dominate our corrupted electoral process. It is outrageous that corporations already attempt to influence or bribe our political candidates through their political action committees called PACs, which solicit employees and shareholders for donations. With this decision, corporations can now also draw their corporate treasuries and pour vast amounts of corporate money through independent expenditures into the electoral swamp already flooded with corporate campaign PAC contribution dollars. This corporatist anti-voter decision is so extreme that it should galvanize a grassroots effort to engage and enact a constitutional amendment to once and for all end corporate personhood and curtail the corrosive impact of big money on politics. It is indeed time for a constitutional amendment to prevent corporate campaign contributions from commercializing our elections and drowning out the civic and political voices and value of citizens and voters. It is way overdue to overthrow King Corporation and restore the sovereignty of we the people. This is these are comments from Ralph Nader, extremely important comments at this time of an amazing decision by the Supreme Court, which the organization Penn says is absolutely unacceptable and refers to it as treason. Very interesting development, and I think it demands a response. There's simply no question about it. We've seen the departure of President Manuel Zelaya from Honduras, and this indeed is a tragedy. He was overthrown totally with the cooperation of the United States. We have acted so many times against democratically elected presidents who we felt were too much on behalf of the people. And that helps us to see the very shallow level of democracy we have. Most of us really have not practiced democracy. Did you practice it in your kindergarten? Did you practice it in your union? Did you practice it in your workplace? Quote, if you don't like it here, go somewhere else, unquote. The practice of democracy is extremely rare, and it's been so clear in our foreign policy that we don't want any part of democracy. Throwing out Manuel Zelaya is a crime against humanity. Now he's on his way to refuge in the Dominican Republic, and there will be representatives of ours in Honduras to welcome the new unelected president put in there the same way we put in the president of Guatemala in 1954 when we overthrew Jacobo Arbenz and put in a representative from the United Fruit Company, the same way we overthrew Salvador Allende, a magnificent leader in Chile, the same way we overthrew Mohamed Mossadegh. It's a line of overthrows that doesn't end, and perhaps the ugliest of all was the overthrow of Jean-Bertrand Aristide in Haiti by the administration of Mr. Bush, where he was sent to Central Africa, dumped there, kidnapped, and remains now in South Africa. And the people of Haiti have one voice today saying, return our president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide. And of course, Aristide is saying, I don't have to come back as president, but I definitely want to come back. And I think that we should make the way for him to do that. And that is a requirement. This type of illegality is not okay. But what happened with the Supreme Court is to take the behavior of Mr. Abramoff to make that legal. So it's now made legal by the Supreme Court to be a Mr. Abramoff. I think that we have to deal with this right away by strong civic action. And we look for those who have commented on it and who are thinking about it and what it might mean. We see comments coming from Chris Hedges, which are important, and I want to share some of those with you, where Chris says the ruling is one more judicial effort to streamline mechanisms for corporate control. It exposes the myth of a functioning democracy and the triumph of corporate power. Now, in my own interjection here, I want to say that there is no democracy really in the corporation. I mean, $10,000 would be 10,000 votes and $1 is one vote. That's really not democracy. That's a kind of a kleptocracy design. Hedges goes on to say it does not significantly alter the political landscape. He says the corporate state is firmly cemented in place. The fiction of democracy remains useful not only for corporations but for our bankrupt liberal class. If the fiction is seriously challenged, liberals will be forced to consider actual resistance, which will neither be pleasant nor easy. As long as the democratic facade exists, liberals can engage in an empty moral posturing that requires little sacrifice or commitment. They can be self-appointed scolds to the Democratic Party, acting as if they are part of the debate and feel vindicated by their cries of protest. Much of the outrage expressed about the court's ruling is the outrage of those who prefer choreographed charade. As long as the charade is played, they do not have to consider how to combat what political philosopher Sheldon Wolin calls our system of inverted totalitarianism. Well, let's see what Wolin means by that. He's a very important political philosopher. Inverted totalitarianism represents the political coming of age of corporate power and the political demobilization of the citizenry. Wolin writes this in the book Democracy Incorporated. Inverted totalitarianism differs from classical forms of totalitarianism, which revolve around a demagogue or charismatic leader and finds its expression in the anonymity of the corporate state. The corporate forces behind inverted totalitarianism do not, as classical totalitarianism movements do, boast of replacing decaying structures with a new revolutionary structure, they purport to honor electoral politics, freedom, and the Constitution, but they so corrupt and manipulate the levers of power as to make democracy impossible. We're going on here about Mr. Woland, this wonderful scholar on the question of democracy and totalitarianism. He states that inverted totalitarianism is not conceptualized as an ideology or objectified in public policy. It is furthered by power holders and citizens who often seem unaware of the deeper consequences of their actions or inactions. But it is as dangerous as classical forms of totalitarianism. In a system of inverted totalitarianism, as this court ruling illustrates, it is not necessary to rewrite the Constitution as a fascist or communist regime might do. It's enough to exploit legitimate power by means of judicial and legislative interpretation. This exploitation ensures that huge corporate campaign contributions are protected speech under the First Amendment. It ensures that heavily financed and organized lobbying by large corporations is interpreted as an application of the people's right to petition government. The court again ratified the concept that corporations are persons, except in those cases where the persons agree to a, quote, settlement. Those within corporations who commit crimes can avoid going to prison by paying large sums of money to the government, while according to this twisted judicial reasoning, not admitting any wrongdoing, there's a word for this. It's called corruption. Corporations have 35,000 lobbyists in Washington and thousands more in state capitals that dole out corporate money to shape and write legislation. They use their political action committees to solicit employees and shareholders for donations to fund pliable candidates. The financial sector, for example, spent more than $5 billion on political campaigns, influence peddling, and lobbying during the last decade, which resulted in sweeping deregulation, the gouging of our consumers, our financial meltdown, and the subsequent looting of the U.S. Treasury. The pharmaceutical research and manufacturers of America spent $26 million last year, and drug companies such as Pfizer, Amgen, and Eli Lilly kicked in tens of millions of more to buy off the two parties. These corporations have made sure our so-called health reform bill will force us to buy their predatory and defective products. The oil and gas industry, the coal industry, defense contractors, and telecommunications companies have thwarted the drive for sustainable energy and orchestrated the steady erosion of civil liberties. Politicians do corporate bidding and stage hollow acts of political theater to keep the fiction of the democratic state alive. These are thoughts coming from Chris Hedges, where he believes that democracy in America is a useful fiction. He states there's no national institution left that can accurately be described as democratic. Citizens, rather than participate in power, are allowed to have virtual opinions to preordained questions, kind of participatory fascism as meaningless as voting on the American Idol. Mass emotions are directed toward the staging of culture wars. This allows us to take emotional stands on issues that are inconsequential to the power elite. Our transformation into an empire has happened in ancient Athens and Rome, has seen the tyranny we practice abroad become tyranny we practice at home. We, like all empires, have been eviscerated by our own expansionism. We utilize weapons of horrific destructive power, subsidize their development with billions of taxpayer dollars, and are the world's largest arms dealer. And the Constitution, as Wolin writes, is conscripted to serve as power's apprentice rather than its conscience. Inverted totalitarianism reverses things, Wolin writes. It is politics all of the time, but a politics largely untempered by the political. Party squabbles are occasionally on public display. There's a frantic and continuous politics among factions of the party. Interest groups, competing corporate powers, and rival media concerns. And there is, of course, the culminating moment of national elections when the attention of the nation is required to make a choice of personalities rather than a choice between alternatives. What is absent is the political, the commitment to finding where the common good lies amidst the welter of well-financed, highly organized, single-minded interests rapidly seeking governmental favors and overwhelming the practices of representative government and public administration by a sea of cash. Hollywood, the news industry, and television, all corporate controlled, have become instruments of inverted totalitarianism. They censor or ridicule those who critique or challenge corporate structures and assumptions. They saturate the airwaves with manufactured controversy, whether it is Tiger Woods or the dispute between Jay Leno and Conan O'Brien. They manipulate images to make us confuse how we are able to feel with knowledge, which is how Barack Obama became president. And the draconian internal control employed by the Department of Homeland Security, the military, and the police over any form of popular dissent, coupled with the corporate media's censorship, does for inverted totalitarianism what thugs and bonfires of books do in classical totalitarian regimes. These are our thoughts about the impact of this Supreme Court decision, where these five justices have made it clear to us who they represent, what they represent, and their moral failings. It seems a replay of historical experience that the bias displayed by today's media should be aimed consistently at the shredded remains of liberalism, Wolin writes. Recall that an element common to most 20th century totalitarianism, whether fascist or Stalinist, was hostility toward the left. In the United States, the left is assumed to consist solely of liberals, occasionally of the left wing of the Democratic Party, never of Democrats, that's with a small D. Liberals, socialists, trade unionists, independent journalists and intellectuals, many of whom were once important voices in our society, have been silenced or targeted for elimination within corporate-controlled academia, the media, and government. Wolin, actually, who taught at Berkeley and later at Princeton, is arguably the country's foremost political philosopher. And yet his book was virtually ignored. This is also why people like Ralph Nader, Dennis Kucinich, Cynthia McKinney, along with intellectuals like Noam Chomsky, are not given a part in our national discourse. The uniformity of opinion is reinforced by the skillfully orchestrated mass emotions of nationalism and patriotism, which paints all dissents as soft or unpatriotic. The patriotic citizen, plagued by fear of job losses and possible terrorist attacks, unfailingly supports widespread surveillance and the militarized state. This means no questioning of the $1 trillion in defense-related spending. It means that the military and intelligence agencies are held above government, as if somehow they are not part of government. The most powerful instruments of state power and control are effectively removed from public discussion. We, as imperial citizens, are taught to be contemptuous of government bureaucracy, yet we stand like sheep before Homeland Security agents in airports and are mute when Congress permits our private correspondence and conversations to be monitored and archived. We endure more state control now than at any time in American history. The civic, patriotic, and political language we use to describe ourselves remains unchanged. We pay fealty to the same national symbols and iconography. We find our collective identity in the same national myths. We continue to defy the founding fathers, but the America we celebrate is an illusion. It does not exist. Our government and judiciary have no real sovereignty. Our press provides diversion, not information. Our organs of security and power keep us domesticated and fearful, as most Iraqis. Capitalism, as Karl Marx understood when it emasculates government, becomes a revolutionary force. And this revolutionary force, best described as inverted totalitarianism, is plunging us into a state of neo-feudalism, perpetual war, and severe repression. The Supreme Court decision is part of our transformation by the corporate state from citizens to prisoners. These are thoughts coming to us by way of Pulitzer Prize winning Chris Hedges, and this can be found in Truth Dig, and perhaps this will help us to understand why it is necessary at this time to engage in these levels of civil disobedience, as the 12 days that were spent in the opposition to the terrorism of torture that we have as our methodology. So you can understand why our first guest was on, why these demonstrations at the Capitol, these die-ins, are critical at this particular time. So understand that this is a true patriotism that we're observing at this time, that 42 were arrested at the U.S. Capitol to denounce the broken promises at Guantanamo and the practice of torture. They were arrested on the Capitol steps holding banners, reading promises broken, broken lives. Inside the Capitol, 14 activists performed a memorial service for the three men whose deaths at Guantanamo were reported as suicides and were found to be actually murder. The ceremony brought the names of these men, Salah Ahmed al-Salami, Mani Shaban al-Tirtami, and Yasser Talal al-Tahrani, into the Capitol Rotunda, where deceased presidents have laid in state. We perform this ceremony to recognize the humanity of those whose lives have been broken by our government's policies of torture and indefinite detention. Witness Against Torture has called for an immediate independent investigation of the deaths at Guantanamo, and for a criminal investigation of all those who allegedly designed, executed, and carried out these policies. These actions are actions that will be remembered historically in the fight to bring democracy to the United States. There's a sad thought here, and that is that we have to deal with this thought because there is absolutely no relationship between capitalism and democracy. The major dictatorships of the world have been capitalist. It's extremely clear whether you look to the Argentine dictatorship or the Chilean dictatorship or any dictatorship. Generally speaking, historically, dictatorships have been capitalist. And we see that in our behavior now with the overthrow of Jean-Bertrand Aristide that has devastated Haiti, with the departure at this very time of the legitimate president of Honduras, leaving his country and having U.S. operatives come down there to welcome an imposter into the presidency of Honduras. This is a very serious situation that we're in, and I think that it's important for us to understand what's going on here so that we can organize to change the situation we live in. The Supreme Court has really let us down, but at the same time, they're reflecting very much of where the government is at. And so we have high hopes that our citizens will respond to the wonderful acts of civil disobedience taking place in Washington, D.C. We need to see more of that on the West Coast as well. And I have high hopes that we can bring it off. I want to thank you for listening today. Our guest was the Professor Jeremy Varone at the New School of Social Research. I want to thank my engineer and editor, Stan Mizrahi. World Focus is produced by the Office of the Americas. You may download World Focus at kpfk.org anytime, any day. Just click on Archives. Then on World Focus, you can contact us at oOA@igc.org. Thanks for listening. Please stay tuned for Ian Masters and Background Briefing. This is Blaise Bonpain.
Fear, fearing fear, fearing fear. There's a siren screaming.